It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, overlooking downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 38 degrees right now. They're calling for mostly sunny skies, but it seems more like mostly cloudy skies outside right now. High of 42 today, light and variable winds. We'll turn to the south and go to 10 miles per hour this afternoon. Isolated showers tonight. Coming up on the Midday News, more community spread cases of COVID in Kodiak. The turkey trot trots onward. Reminder from the Coast Guard to mariners and harbor users. And what is in the new fisheries management plan for the Cook Inlet drift fishery? Those stories and more after national headline news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President-elect Joe Biden is moving ahead with the transition process a day after the Trump administration officially designated him the apparent winner of the election after weeks of delay. Speaking in Wilmington, Delaware today, Biden formally introduced the key members of his foreign policy and national security teams.
Together, these public servants will restore America globally, its global leadership, and its moral leadership, and will ensure that our service members, diplomats, and intelligence professionals can do their job free of politics.
Biden is expected to announce additional cabinet picks in the coming weeks. NPR's Domenico Montanaro reports the makeup of Biden's team so far is reminiscent of the Obama administration.
What I think we're starting to see is something of an Obama third term, really. Janet Yellen was picked by President Obama, put in place at the Federal Reserve, and now we're seeing a lot of the same kinds of names, types of people, deputies moving into principal roles. There's a lot of continuity there, but of course, these are also people who've been traditionally close to Joe Biden, and of course, Joe Biden was close to President Obama.
NPR's Domenico Montanaro reporting. At the White House today, President Trump took part in what has become a beloved Thanksgiving holiday tradition, the annual turkey pardon.
Today is my honor to present to you this year's lucky bird, corn, and just in case we needed him, Cobb. Corn and Cobb. That's not too hard to remember, is it?
Corn was granted a full pardon, but both turkeys will be spared. They spent Monday night at Washington, D.C.'s famed Willard Hotel and will live out their lives at Iowa State University. Wall Street shattered new records today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average surpassed the 30,000 mark for the first time ever. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports positive news about coronavirus vaccines have helped stocks power higher.
The Dow remains the world's best-known stock index by far, so passing 30,000 for the first time sends a powerful message about the resurgence of the market. Stocks have taken a wild ride this year. The Dow came close to 30,000 in February and then fell back sharply after the coronavirus lockdowns began, falling to 18,591 on March 23rd. But since then, the market has gradually come back, thanks in part to emergency lending programs set up by the Fed and Congress. As states began easing lockdown requirements, the market came back even more. And it hit record highs amid news from Pfizer and other drug makers that vaccines they're developing have shown great promise in fighting the coronavirus. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow was up 454 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
As Thanksgiving Day inches closer, The Kodiak Area Emergency Operations Center continues to announce new community spread cases of COVID-19. 13 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. One case tested on November 18th and another on the 21st have been classified as community spread. There are 5 new close contact cases, 5 cases classified as community spread, and 1 travel-related case. This brings the case count associated with Kodiak Island Borough to 246 since the start of the pandemic, with 72 cases currently classified as active. While COVID-19 has forced many of us to modify our plans for the Thanksgiving holiday, it still hasn't caught up with the Kodiak Turkey Trot, the annual Thanksgiving Day 5K event hosted by the Kodiak High School cross country team, will still be taking place this year with a few changes for COVID-19. The registration will be from 9:15 to 10 this Thursday morning at the Kodiak Teen Center. The run will be held entirely outdoors, and runners will start as soon as the registration is complete.
This year will look a little different. Typical years, we had 170 community members show up to run or walk the course, and it was a rainy Kodiak day, and that didn't seem to dampen anyone's spirits. This year, we will be starting the race in waves of 10 runners apiece, hopefully shuttling people through the start line in a fairly efficient process from when they arrive so that we don't have clustering of individuals standing around waiting to start.
That's Ashley Mortensen, head coach for the boys' cross-country team at the Kodiak High School. She says that the entry fee for the Turkey Trot has been removed this year.
We are not charging a set entry fee this year, but we are open to donations in any amount to our program if people are able to give. We know that this year has been financially trying for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, and we want to offer a positive community event that is open to anyone regardless of what their circumstances are.
Runners will begin in waves and may have to time themselves, as official timing will be limited. Even though Kodiak is not expected to get any significant snow and ice until December, as we head into winter, now is as good a time as any to prepare your moored boat for the weather that lies ahead. Recently, the U.S. Coast Guard reminded mariners and harbor users to be prepared to remove excess snow and ice buildup from moored vessels this winter. Accumulation of snow and ice on a vessel can create the risk of reduced stability and the potential for sinking, as well as property damage and pollution. Michael Folkerts, boat safety specialist with the 17th Coast Guard District, says, quote, "Ice and snow can clog cockpit drains, causing additional weight loads that can push the waterline over scuppers and through hulls. A common cause of harbor sinkings are frozen and subsequently cracked through hulls and failed fittings. Winter conditions can be rough on boats, and boaters need to take extra precautions," unquote. Tips to ensure vessel safety in the winter include removing snow and ice accumulation, performing routine vessel checks, and verifying and updating owner contact information with the harbor master. The southern half of Cook Inlet will have a new fishery management plan in under a month. Commercial fishermen are organizing with the help of their city councils to make sure that plan is not the proposed Alternative 4, which would close off federal waters south of Calgon Island to commercial salmon fishing. Kenai Mayor Brian Gabriel brought forth a resolution to oppose such a closure at a special Kenai City Council meeting on Monday night.
I hate to be overdramatic in a lot of cases, but you could almost call it a death knell for drift fishing in Cook Inlet.
Fisheries management plans govern federal waters or exclusive economic zones. In the case of the inlet, the waters south of Calgon Island and further than 3 miles offshore. Those waters were managed by the state until 2017, when a court sided with 2 Cook Inlet Fishermen's Associations that the area should be managed by the federal government. After that decision, the National Marine Fisheries Service and the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council got to work on a new FMP. The council met in October to discuss 2 viable FMP alternatives, One which would delegate management to the state with federal oversight, and another which would give the federal government management of the southern portion of the inlet. But another alternative was added at that meeting, after the comment period had already ended. Called Alternative 4, that plan would lead to an extended closure of the fisheries in the inlet's EEZ. Robert Ruffner, a former member of the Board of Fisheries and a resident of Soldotna, worries that closing the inlet's EEZ would cause huge economic damages to the Kenai Peninsula, both for fishermen and processors.
Here in Cook Inlet, you know, we don't have a very long salmon fishing season, and predominantly those early catches of salmon occur in these federal waters. And so those are high quality fish, high value fish that are delivered to processors that extend their season by a couple of weeks. If those waters are closed and we have one of our larger runs come back, it's going to be very difficult for the processors to be able to handle the fish in a compressed time frame, and the quality is going to be diminished.
In a public review draft, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says the closure would lead to increased escapement of sockeye and cohos to the northern part of the inlet, ultimately benefiting sports and personal use fisheries there. The department also cites, quote, complex, intertwined state-federal joint management, unquote, as a benefit of the closures. Ruffner thinks that it's unlikely that representatives from other states on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council will look to the state of Alaska to determine which alternative it chooses, but he thinks comments from municipalities like Kenai might provide some alternative perspectives for the council. Seward and Homer also heard comments on the matter at their city council meetings Monday night. Both cities are discussing taking a stance on the matter at future meetings. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is taking public comment on the matter until 5 p.m. Friday. A representative from Fish and Game could not be reached before airtime. This summer, the COVID-19 pandemic threatened to scuttle the Alaska patrol of the Coast Guard cutter, where over 10% of the crew was put in quarantine. But the ship's mission was saved when a large group of cadets, the youngest, newest, most inexperienced members of the Coast Guard, was called on to help. KTOO's Matt Miller has this story.
To use a very old nautical phrase, Captain Blake Novak was caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Novak is commanding officer of the cutter Monroe, one of the biggest vessels in the Coast Guard fleet. The Monroe was in Dutch Harbor this summer when Novak got word of a big storm heading their way. The weather forecast was so bad that Novak was advised to stay in port for the next 4 days. Otherwise,
we were going to encounter 18-plus foot seas off the beam.
If they had stayed in port as advised, they would miss a planned military exercise off Hawaii. As Novak saw it, though, they had to leave, like right now. But many of his crew were ashore for a barbecue celebration that included having a few beers.
We call it the bottle-to-throttle policy, which says you need to stop drinking 12 hours prior to getting the ship underway.
The Monroe normally has 150 crew members, but many couldn't help prepare the ship for departure because they had been drinking. So Novak turned to 16 cadets fresh from the Coast Guard Academy.
You know, the majority of our cadets were underage. So, you know, right away, they're filling shoes and able to step in immediately to assist and assume those roles to help out with the crew.
Novak says the cadets handled the ship's line so they could leave Dutch Harbor as soon as possible. First Class Cadet Jordan Park says that turned out to be a long day.
And it was really great to be relied on in that way. I think it was a little bit tough because we've been up since pretty early that morning pulling in, and we'd expected to stay overnight, and then not staying overnight and getting underway that night was a little bit challenging, but that's how the Coast Guard is, and it was cool to experience that.
Novak says they then steamed at high speed for 48 hours to beat the weather and eventually get to Hawaii on time. So many cadets serving aboard a Coast Guard ship is very unusual, but it's an unusual year. The Monroe's mission in the Bering Sea this summer included fisheries enforcement, search and rescue, and patrolling the maritime boundary with Russia. But just before the ship left, Novak says they had an asymptomatic crew member who tested positive for COVID-19. The crew member and their close contacts, 18 people total, had to stay in quarantine. So Novak asked the Coast Guard Academy in Connecticut for help. Many cadets were just returning from a summer break.
They were in the military, we would say they're voluntold.
Novak says the arriving cadets were excited, but understandably very nervous. These cadets are essentially officers in training, and for 2 months they filled roles normally held by enlisted service members just out of boot camp. Senior enlisted personnel trained the cadets to handle the lines for the ship, work in the mess, serve as lookouts, and steer the ship. Third-class cadet Branielle Carrillo says she expected to be working hard.
But we knew that it was going to be a great learning environment for the future and understanding like what the fleet is actually about compared to us being here at school.
And Carrillo says they learned the importance of working as a team.
You have to use like other people that are around you in order to like get what needs to be done. So that was like a biggest lesson to a lot of the things that we did on Monroe.
Novak, who considers his ship as a floating schoolhouse, says their experiences are important for any future leader, whether in the Coast Guard or elsewhere.
These young women and men in the future are going to be put in positions where they're managing our enlisted personnel. So for them to get a true feeling of what it's like to walk and spend a day, in this case, to spend 2 months in the same shoes as our enlisted personnel, it's very important from a leadership development standpoint.
Not only did all the cadets have a unique experience, they also received a meritorious team commendation that is usually only awarded to standard Coast Guard personnel. The Coast Guard Academy says it's rare for these cadets, some a little over a year out of high school, to wear such a red ribbon on their uniform before they even graduate. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
With Thanksgiving approaching, health officials are urging everyone in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta to stay home this holiday to prevent spreading COVID-19. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports that hospitals across the state are filling up, and cases could soon overwhelm the local health care system.
When patients in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta need advanced medical care, they are usually sent to the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. But ANMC is over capacity with COVID patients. ANMC has opened an alternate care site on its campus to hold the overflow and is dedicating another hospital wing to COVID patients. Its critical care unit is nearly full. There are now multiple critical patients who require individual nursing and are lying on their stomachs in prone position to help them breathe. ANMC Acting Administrator Dr. Robert Anders said during a virtual town hall Monday night that the critical care unit is so full and so challenged that it cannot hold all the hospital's acute patients.
So we're extremely tenuous right now.
20% of COVID patients hospitalized at ANMC require critical care, and the staffing and beds in critical care units across the state are limited. With the COVID cases increasing statewide, he expects the situation to worsen. He says the time to control the spread of COVID is now. Dr. Ellen Hodges, chief of staff for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, agrees.
Now is the time to act to reduce our caseloads and try to prevent us from completely overwhelming the entire healthcare system.
So far, the Regional Health Corporation has been able to medevac every patient who needs advanced care to another hospital in the state. And Hodges says the Bethel Hospital has been able to admit every patient who needs care for COVID pneumonia. She wants to keep it that way.
We're sort of in the yellow status. We're like a little bit on the edge of tipping over, but with the increasing case counts every day, more and more cases, I'm concerned that we will reach this capacity soon.
The YK Delta has the highest COVID case rate in the state. Across the region, the rate is about 237 per 100,000 people. The Kuzilvac census area along the lower Yukon is even higher, at 455 per 100,000 people. In the city of Bethel, the case rate is higher still, at 475 per 100,000 people. Because cases in the region are so high, many people are likely carrying the virus and don't know it, but are still able to spread it to others. State epidemiologists estimate a third of people with COVID never show symptoms. YKHC is encouraging everyone in the region to get a COVID test to identify who is carrying the virus. And it's asking everyone to hunker down. If cases overwhelm the local healthcare system, there might not be anywhere else to send patients. Alaska's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, says most hospitals in the state are full on most days. And with cases rising nationwide, it's becoming harder to send patients out of state. And it's also hard to get healthcare workers to come into the state. We're reaching a tipping point. When hospitals in other states have overflowed, excess deaths have followed. There aren't enough healthcare workers to treat COVID patients and also emergent cases such as strokes, heart attacks, and appendicitis. Zink says it'll take everyone working together to avoid that.
This is not going to last forever. This is the time to dig deep, all of us, and really limit our spread. Not travel, not gather, wear a mask, keep our distance.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation has urged every community in the region to lock down for a month. Most communities have done so. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Some hopeful signs for Pacific halibut. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
The Pacific halibut fishery ended on November 15th, and it's estimated that Alaska's longline fleet took just under 15 million pounds out of a 17 million pound catch limit. Homer held on as the top port for landings, followed by Kodiak and Juneau. Results from the annual stock survey have raised cautious hopes for a possible uptick in some fishing regions next year. Despite a cutback in some survey areas due to the coronavirus, the 2020 survey is hailed as one of the best ever.
On the commercial side, we have nearly identical data set to what we would have in any normal year. And on the survey side, although we did curtail some of the distribution of the survey, we end up in aggregate at the coastwide level with one of the most precise surveys we've ever had.
Ian Stewart is lead scientist for the International Pacific Halibut Commission. Stewart said stock declines are projected over the next several years, but there are some encouraging signs. Trends seen in the survey on both coastwide halibut weights and catches ticked upwards by 6%. Total weights in the Central Gulf were up 24%, but other Alaska regions didn't fare so well. Weights per unit were down 5% in Southeast and 6% in the Western Gulf. They were a mixed bag of small changes along the Aleutians, but weights increased by 8% in the Bering Sea. Stewart also said that halibut bycatch levels by boats targeting other fish also showed declines this year to just over 5 million pounds.
This represents by far the lowest value that we've seen in the entire historical time series since back to the early 1960s. Previously, we had seen a value of around 6 million pounds.
The North Pacific Council sets the bycatch levels. Meanwhile, the IPHC will set the 2021 halibut catch limits at its virtual meetings set for January 25th through 29th. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 24th day of November, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 9:14 this morning, and it's going to go ahead and set again at 4:39 this afternoon. That will give us 7 hours and 20 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 28 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 4:32 p.m. That will be a 2.6 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:18 p.m. of 6.4 feet. Your next low tide will be at 4:19 a.m. of 1.9 feet, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning on the east side at 10:50 a.m. of 7.9 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Euganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 5:05 this afternoon of 3.8 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:57 of 11.5 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:06 a.m. of 3.5 feet, and your high tide tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 11:19 a.m., a 13.6 foot tide. 40 degrees here in Kodiak. They're still calling for mostly sunny skies, but it looks more like mostly cloudy out there. Isolated showers tonight, mostly before 9 p.m. Then plain old rain after 9 p.m. Low of about 39 overnight tonight. Southeast wind to 25 miles per hour with gusts as high as 30. Your chance of precipitation tonight, 100%. For tomorrow, rain is likely before 9 a.m., then isolated showers between 9 a.m. and noon. Cloudy skies tomorrow should become gradually more sunny, with a temperature falling to about 39 by 10 a.m. Southwest winds at 20 miles per hour will turn to the west and go to as high as 35 miles per hour tomorrow. Speaking of weather, Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 977 millibar low, 180 nautical miles south of Yakutat, will exit the Gulf to the southeast by Tuesday afternoon and go to 992 millibars. A strong front will enter the western Gulf early Wednesday morning, reaching the northern Gulf by Wednesday afternoon, and a 980 millibar low will form along the front over Kennedy entrance. Wednesday afternoon, moving over the Prince of William Sound at 990 millibars on Thursday morning. Well, the result of all that is a gale warning for tonight and Wednesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. West wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 14 feet will increase to south 40 knots tonight. Seas will build to 19 feet tonight after midnight. For tomorrow, look for southwest winds to 35 knots and seas to 20 feet. And for Wednesday night, look for west wind to 30 knots and seas to 17 feet. Pretty sloppy, too, I imagine. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, we have a gale warning for tonight. Southwest winds at 25 knots right now and seas to 6 feet will increase to southeast 35 knots tonight, seas building to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest wind to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet. And for Thursday, southwest winds at 20 knots and seas to 5 feet in the Shelikof. For Kodiak's inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, we have a small craft advisory for tonight and Wednesday in Chiniak Bay. South wind to 30 knots tonight. Seas will build to 12 feet after midnight. For tomorrow, south winds to 30 knots will turn to the west and go to 20 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 5 feet, subsiding to 3 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Marmot Bay, we have a gale warning tonight with southeast wind to 35 knots tonight. Seas building to 12 feet in Marmot Bay after midnight. For tomorrow, look for south winds to 30 knots becoming west. Tomorrow afternoon, seas to 11 feet, should subside to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon in Marmot Bay. Attention water and sewer utility customers. The City of Kodiak is committed to the COVID-19 emergency health response and has extended the deadline to accept applications for the Water and Sewer Utility Relief Program until December 15th at 5 p.m. All customers, literally every single customer, is eligible and may apply for financial relief in the form of a one-time utility billing credit not to exceed $500. All city water and utility customers are encouraged to apply as soon as possible. Applications are available on the city website. For additional information, call the city cashier's office at 486-8650 or email utility@city.kodiak.ak.us. And if you have any questions, you can again contact the city cashier's office. That's 486-8650. But the qualifications are, if you have any expense at all related to COVID, then you qualify. The Kodiak Police Department would like to remind you again, the Pillar Mountain Access Road is closed for the winter. Also, the clerk hiring committee, which was to meet today, has been canceled. It will be rescheduled soon. Local artists and businesses are encouraged to donate to the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary. They're looking for donations for their upcoming auction. Funds raised from the auction will be used for the Auxiliary Scholarship Fund, helping students in the healthcare fields achieve their educational goals. Donations can be accepted through the 5th, and if you have something you can donate to the auction, please contact either Becca at 942-1680 or Yvonne at 654-9899.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.